So let me share the screen and go with that, the answer to last time question. Somebody asked, so what's the difference between or difference, or what's the proliferation, the impact of proliferation explained in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta. The Mula Pariyaya Sutta is actually the first sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, and there are, in a way, Buddha is coming up with 24 concepts. About these 24 concepts, actually these 24 concepts are the examples, actually. He has taken from different areas, different examples, representing different areas. Say, for example, from the four elements, he has taken certain examples. And from the different kinds of beings, he has taken examples. And different kinds of higher jhanas, he has taken examples. And our sense experience, he has taken examples. And on the other hand, certain dogmatic understandings, our views, he has taken examples. So these are the 24 different kinds of examples he has taken. So I'm not going to explain everything here. But interesting point is, now, with respect to all these different examples, so what is the way they are handled by different people? So Buddha is now taking four persons. One is an ordinary worldling, untaught ordinary person, Asutava Pudujjana. And the second one is who is in the higher training. He's a seeker. He's a noble person. That he's the second person. Third person is an Arahant. The fourth person is a Sammasambuddha. And the third and the fourth persons, Arahant and the Sammasambuddha, so their reaction or their way of looking at these four, or rather 24 concepts, are very similar. They are identical. So in that sense, we can consider that all three persons are included here. The typical worldling who has no idea about the teaching. And then the second person is the noble person. The third person is the Arahant. So the first person actually is in a kind of a complete typical cognition, recognition. Say, for example, he has seen a chair. So typically he divided immediately. So I'm here, chair is there. So that typical recognition. So he recognized himself as a person. And in front of him, there is a chair. So that is the object. Now he wants to recognize, oh, this is a beautiful chair. So I want to have it. So this is my chair. So likewise, he start thinking about that chair. So after he has seen a particular object, he immediately start thinking about it. And he go through the typical kind of recognition. So different names are given to different objects. So he know this is a chair, this is not a table, this is not a cricket bat, this is a chair. So he knows that. So he then recognize it. And maybe he is giving some value to it. And maybe he is now thinking about it. Now all different kinds of what we call as the language, phrases, etc. are there to explain that incident, how he is seeing, how he is interacting with this particular object. So what is the relationship with him and the object? Now all these things are available. Now all this promotes a kind of a manjana, conceiving in his mind. So eye-centered thinking is now promoted and he is now thinking. And ultimately Buddha mentioned, he delights in earth, pataving abhinandati. So he wants to have, he like to see this particular object. So I have taken a simple object here as a chair. And so this is the typical mundane or worlding, how he is operating in this, in the whole world. And next comes the, what we call as the second person. The disciple in higher training. Now he, rather than immediately jump to thinking, he has certain amount of his own practice. Certain insights are now operating in his mind. So he has worked out in the Rupakhanda, the form aggregate. He has seen what is really available there. So what is the impact of the earth element, water element, fire element, element. So he has gone through that fair amount of thorough understanding, some direct understanding. And so basically he has seen it. As a result of that, he was able to maintain a mind free from the what we call as the form element. He has developed certain amount of mindfulness, certain amount of kayanupassana. So as a result of that, he can keep the mind away from the body. He can keep the mind free from the different sense objects. But unfortunately, it is not perfect yet. So what's the procedure here is highlighted. We are pataving patavito abhinyaya pataving ma manyi. So basically, he has to further restrain himself. Mind still trying to promote thinking. Mind wants to think, but he is now applying brakes. He is reminding himself that there is a deeper teaching that I have seen. So this is not the reality. This is something man-made. This is a kind of a conventional object. So don't get attached to it. Don't get delighted about it. So don't overthink about it. Now he is in a way correcting himself. He is advising himself. He understands the proclivity available in the mind. He understands the tendency in the mind to overthink, to possess it and to have it, to reach to it. The typical old routine, the typical old habit is sometimes coming up, but he is restraining himself. So that's beautifully mentioned. Pataviya mamanyi, patavito mamanyi, pataving meti mamanyi. So basically he is now advising himself, restraining himself. He should not conceive himself apart from earth, should not conceive earth to be mine, so etc. etc. So likewise, he tried to minimize conceive. He tried to minimize conceptual proliferation. Now he is going through the training. He is restraining his mind. He understands the tendency available in the mind for proliferation. So he is trying to minimize that. So he is restraining himself. He understands this weakness is still available in the mind, but he is restraining himself. So that is the noble person. Then the arahant. The arahant is completely free from prapancha. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself apart from earth. He does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. So you can see with respect to anything, he has no conceiving. He has no any sort of a mental proliferation. Because he has seen the things as they truly are. He has fully understood it. He directly knows earth as earth. Pataving patavito abhijanati. Having known directly earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. So basically he has thorough understanding. He has fully understood. As a result of that, prapancha is completely cut off. No more proliferation going on in his mind. So these are the three interesting differences. We can see how prapancha is operating in a worldly person, to what extent prapancha is operating in a noble person, and how an arahant is completely free from conceptual proliferation. Okay, now I think you can start, Chamida.
Sorry, Bhante. I think something happened with the computer and I had to log out and come back in. Before we start the questions, I would just like to advise everyone that we start the program at 7 p.m. Australia is daylight saving time now, so which is still 1:30 in Sri Lanka. So that's just an announcement we did last time. So from this week onwards, that's the start time. Panthi, we have six questions today.
Right.
Question number one of six. Sorry, before that, I was actually going to present that question that we had from last week. So now we can just look at the questions this week. Question number one of six. This is on the Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, is there a direct connection between some stages of prapancha and the bhava or becoming independent? Or becoming independent origination. with metta. That's the end of the question.
Dependent origination.
Yes.
So can you repeat the first part, Chamila, the question? What
is, is there a direct connection between some stages of prapanya and the bhava? Or becoming... or
in
becoming
the dependent origination.
In dependent origination. Yes.
So we can say a certain amount of relationship is there. You know that when we do thinking, and that thinking slowly develops a desire, and that desire leads to becoming. Now I want it, I strongly want it, I strongly want to possess it. Now I am thinking about it, and you become that. So that bhava is now has arisen. So the new state has arisen in the mind. So previously assume that your mind is very calm, relaxed, detached, no proliferation at all. You are in a peaceful state. But you start thinking about someone or something or some kind of an activity or something. And now that promotes certain amount of desire, certain amount of wanting in the mind. Now you start imagining about it. Now you start different kinds of mental formations. And it can lead to bhava, what we can call as the upadana, clinging. So you are fully attached to that. You are basically grasping that state. So as a result of that, now you are becoming that. Upadana paccaya bhava. Once you grasp, so you become that. So on the other hand, we can say, so the proliferation process is causing or promoting this becoming process. On the other hand, by thinking you can become someone. By thinking you can mentally act as someone. You can assume yourself as someone. Because thoughts are properly showing you a different path, and you are navigating in that path, and you become that. You become someone. So you have lost your identity in a way. That identity in the sense that you were no one, basically. So you didn't have any kind of an ego. You didn't have any kind of a self-view. But as you are continuing thinking, now you slowly promote ego. You promote self. And ultimately, you become someone, and that has a self. You are a person now. You are an individual now. So therefore, we can say, yes, prapancha is causing the becoming. Prapancha is causing the existence, causing the dependent origination to continue, ultimately ending the suffering.
Question number 2 of 6 is on the Dhamma Saman again. Dear Bhante, what are the strategies to overcome prapancha? Last week, Venerable Bhante said we will discuss about it as part of the book of this book later. But every moment we are creating so much prapancha, and a bit curious to know what strategies are there briefly, until it can be discussed in detail, so we can start the practice. Much merits for your guidance.
So basically, you can practice mindfulness, so that itself is a very strong strategy to overcome prapancha. So basically, immediately we can't confront various thought processes in the mind. So the best strategy is to pay attention to your bodily activities. Say while brushing your teeth, say you are paying attention to brushing teeth. Say while having your meals, okay, you are mindfully having your meals. While say washing dishes, okay, you do that mindfully. Say while sweeping, you are doing that mindfully. So likewise, as much as possible, trying to keep the mind in the present moment, maybe engage with the present activity. So that is one interesting strategy we have to overcome prapancha. Because more and more you are grounded in yourself. More and more we are within the self-awareness. That self-awareness is a must. Because if it is available only, we can talk about Chittanupassana to directly understand the reactions or the activities happening within the mind. So in order to have that, we need a fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension. So the beginning to standpoint, what we call as the beginning of the whole practice, is the Kayanupassana. So therefore, I would say start practicing mindfulness. So mindfulness helps you to overcome prapancha to fair extent, just to be with yourself. and to even to understand how thoughts are merely thoughts, rather than getting trapped in them, but driven by thoughts. And you can simply see thoughts as merely thoughts. So all that are possible when you are practicing mindfulness. So to overcome conceptual proliferation, one strong strategy available is the development of the four foundations of mindfulness.
Question number 3 of 6. This is on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during sitting, I use the breath to establish mindfulness. And when it fades away, try to be aware of the thoughts and observe the mind. During day-to-day activities, time to time, I observe the mind as well. After your recent book reading sessions, I could add the understanding of thoughts and mental proliferations to the observation as well. I will be grateful if Bhante can explain this again as a technique, how we can use this knowledge in the day-to-day activity mindfulness practice with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think it's a sort of understanding its gravity, how harmful allowing the mind to overthink. So we are very much like understanding the gravity in this whole process, how important it is to minimize conceptual proliferation. And again, how the thinking is happening. So we are trying to understand the building blocks. So that help us to, you know, to unentangle the whole process, to disentangle the whole process. So that is the purpose of this. And think as you are continuing our whole book, you may get thorough understanding.
Question number 4 of 6. This is also on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, much merits for your guidance on this program. My question is regarding watching thoughts. In the sitting practice, once the breath fades away and the mind comes to stillness, thoughts appear as the prominent factor. So I begin to observe how the thoughts come and go. However, after some time of observing this, I begin to feel very tired. It seems that the process, although it's just in your head, I feel like I have run a mile and the mind feels very tired. So how do you keep observing the thoughts without feeling this tiredness? Much merits for your reply with metta. That's the end of the question. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can time to time come back to the body, because it seems like you are trying to suppress thoughts. You are spending fair amount of energy in this whole process. Because if we don't have enough mindfulness, then probably it takes some time for the thoughts to go away. So typically thoughts are very weak when the mindfulness is strong. But if the mindfulness is not that strong, then thoughts can propagate to some extent. It can overwhelm us to some extent. And after a deep struggle, we are winning, by the way. That's good, by the way. But still, it's a little tiresome, because still our mindfulness is not strong enough. So one possibility is that you can develop further amount of kaya anupassana. Maybe you can spend some time in sitting meditation, keeping your attention at the breathing, or maybe rising and falling, understanding their true nature, how they are coming and going, how they are rising and passing away. And that help us to develop fair amount of understanding, fair amount of insights, how instantaneous, how inconstant are all these different phenomena, maybe bodily phenomena, maybe feelings, maybe thoughts. So you are understanding their impermanent nature, impermanent characteristic. And you understand their corelessness. There is no essence there. There is no person there. There is no self there. So you are understanding in other sense, anicca dukkha anatta. Understanding the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the non-self. So that becomes a fair insight for yourself, and help us to minimize thinking and keep the mind relaxed. And on the other hand, so the developed mindfulness and clear comprehension is fairly strong, so that the thoughts are becoming weaker and weaker. And they may not stay longer in your mind. They may not occupy the mind for longer time. Once you pay attention to them, they quickly fade away. It happens naturally. So it seems like if you become so tiresome in Chittanupassana, that indicates still the necessary amount of mindfulness, necessary amount of clear comprehension is not still available. So therefore, I invite you to spend some time in mindful walking, mindful sitting, and maintaining certain amount of kayanupassana practice so that further your mindfulness and clear comprehension is improved.
Question number 5 of 7. This is a Dhammasambandha question. Dear Bhante, can you please help us to link the concept of Prapancha with Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path? Much merits for your service for explaining deep Dhamma in a simple manner with metta. That's the end of the question.
So basically, we'll see. So I like to, rather than simply giving a, say, casual answer, I like to connect this with some suttas and give you some comprehensive answer. Let me give some time. And maybe Venerable Jnanananda also has discussed this in the book, how what you call this Four Noble Truths are connected with the Prapancha. And of course, how already we, to some extent, we discuss how the aggregates are connected to the Prapancha. Actually, you know that the First Noble Truth itself is the five clinging aggregates. So First Noble Truth is not apart from the aggregates. So the aggregates are the First Noble Truth. So the deeper we understand about the First Noble Truth, deeper we understand the aggregates. And in order to do that, we have to understand or practice the what we call as the Satipatthana, the four foundations of mindfulness, where the mindfulness practice on the body help us to understand the form aggregate, mindfulness of the feelings help us to understand the feeling aggregate, mindfulness based on the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana help us to understand all five aggregates. So basically like that, so we are trying to understand the what we call the First Noble Truth. But the interesting point is, as we are deeply understanding all these, so the tanha, the craving, the Second Noble Truth start fading away. Dukkha samudayam pahatabba. So we start having a loosen grip on the craving. So craving is now become weaker and weaker. So as much as possible, probably now we are in a peaceful state of mind. So the tanha has sometimes abandoned, so the mind rests. Mind is free from tanha. Tanha has ceased. So we are resting in the cessation, time to time. Now we are resting or recognizing the Third Noble Truth. And this whole path is the Fourth Noble Truth, the Magga, or the path, the Noble Eightfold Path. So basically, when we are practicing four foundations of mindfulness, actually we are understanding the Four Noble Truths. So we, I mean, all these Noble Truths are fairly interconnected. The First Noble Truth indicates that we have to deeply understand that Dukkhaṃ ariya saccaṃ pariññeyaṃ. The Second Noble Truth invites us to abandon that Dukkha samudayaṃ ariya saccaṃ pahātabbaṃ. And the Third Noble Truth expects us to realize that Dukkha nirodhaṃ ariya saccaṃ sacchikātabbaṃ. And the Fourth Noble Truth expects us to develop that Dukkha nirodhagāmini paṭipadaṃ ariya saccaṃ bhavetabba. So you need to develop that. So all that is included actually in the four foundations of mindfulness. So slowly, slowly, as we are continuing that, actually the craving, as you, even today as we discuss, craving is one area promotes proliferation, promotes suffering. So when we are minimizing craving, so that means we are reducing suffering. That means we are reducing conceptual proliferation. So they are fairly interconnected. So craving promotes thinking. Craving promotes prapancha. So when we are practicing, the craving reduce. That means reducing prapancha, reducing overthinking. So mind remains calm. Mind remains silent. No need to think. So mind enjoys the silence, inner silence. So Noble Truths are fairly interconnected, included in the Satipatthana practice.
Bhante, we have 3 more questions, but we've gone over time already.
Fine. It's okay, because next week I won't be able to conduct the session. Therefore, we can spend some more time.
Okay. So this is question number 6 of 8. This the Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Venerable Sir, can you please explain how to overcome overthinking via vipassana meditation? With metta,
That's what I mean. As I already mentioned, mindfulness practice is one area so that you are in a way deviating your attention back to the body without, at the moment, if you don't have confidence to immediately confront thoughts, say you are deviating your attention or paying your attention back to the body. That is one area, one strategy we have. Actually, you can refer Vitakka Santana Sutta, where Buddha comes up with five methods to overcome overthinking. So probably as a separate section, I'll take it. Actually, definitely Venerable Jnananda has taken it in the coming, the sections. So you have to be a little patient. So, so let's discuss that interesting question. So various interesting areas are available in this book. So very, very rich book, comprising many, many areas of vipassana practice. So please be patient. So we are going to discuss all these methods available in the coming sections.
Question number 7 of 8. This is a general question. Vante, you mentioned to a question today that when you are eating, be aware that you are eating. How do we do that, Vante, with metta? That's the end of the question.
So you mindfully eat. That's it. So don't think about it. Just do it. So basically, sometimes we are trying to plan, how am I going to mindfully eat? So you are thinking about that also. Now you are going to plan mindfully eat. So then it's going to be, you are not going to be successful. So rather while eating, say you take different dishes. Assume that now you are mixing the food. So what are you feeling while mixing the food? So what is the texture of the rice? So what is the texture of the different curries? And what are the differences? Say, is when you are touching rice, when you are touching a particular curry, is the sensation is the same or is there any difference? So it's very much like you are in the present moment. As much as possible, these are very, very, fundamental things. So you can feel that. So while you are sitting, currently assume that we all are sitting. So how are you feeling right now while you are sitting? So as we just did the practice, so we know, okay, my head is straight, neck is straight, body is straight, my buttocks are touching the chair. So you can see that sitting posture. So we are coming to the body. So similarly, while eating also, so when you are mixing food, what do you feel to your fingertips? Is there any kind of, sticky feeling? Is there any kind of wet feeling? Or is there any kind of a dry feeling? Or maybe you can feel the odor of the food. And maybe what we call the salivation happens. And now you are taking a certain amount of lump of rice to your mouth. Now you are opening the mouth. Now you are tasting it. So rather than immediately swallowing it, maybe you are tasting, different tastes are there. Now assume that you are swallowing it. Likewise, so each and every little activities involved in this eating process, you can mindfully go through. Actually, you can watch. There's a beautiful video prepared by Satipasala. You can go through that video also. Probably Chamila can share that if you can find that's available in the Satipasala website. Mindful eating. So there it is very beautifully explained. Very little activities are there while we are going through this eating. So how about knowing that those little parts available in this eating? So that is where we are trying to understand mindful eating.
We have one more question. Question number 8 of 8. Can we, or how does one, help a baby to grow up with the least amount of developing a sense of me, I, and mine? That's the end of the question.
I don't think that we have to purposely try to avoid that, by the way. Because now we are trying to apply some deeper Buddhist teaching into a little kid. I don't think it is necessary. Because, you know, to some extent, having personality view may be useful sometimes. Tanhaṁ nissāya tanhā pahātabbu. Mānaṁ nissāya mānaṁ pahātabbu. So that's another strategy Buddha, or rather Venerable Ānanda, is pointing out. So when you have a certain amount of personality, so you want to achieve something. So it's promoting that. In a way, you have a goal. You have an ambition. You are desire-driven. But if that desire is a noble desire, say you want to become a stream winner. You want to become an arahant. So you want to have a certain amount of understanding of the Dhamma. So you want to have, say, insights in the insight practice. So these are, in a way, desires, but desires are now aimed, directed towards a noble goal. So therefore, we can't say that when it comes to morality, certain amount of ego is there. So I am the one going to be a virtuous person. I was a bad person, now I want to become a virtuous person. Accept it. I am the one who is going to develop certain amount of samadhi, concentration. Okay, I am is there. So I am developing samadhi. Fine. Then you are developing samadhi. But later, when you comes to panyasikha, the third level, vipassana practice, there you understand deeply how these phenomena are absence of any kind of an essence. It doesn't have any inner core. There is no self in it. So you can't actually teach all this to a child, then it's too much. So therefore, I feel that let him have the, you know, the childhood. Let him enjoy the childhood. By the way, you can give him a little bit of some good qualities, like developing certain amount of mindfulness. Say, try to be in the present moment. Don't go ahead with too much thinking. And these are certain other areas that you can inculcate in his mind. Maybe later, as he is growing up, slowly, slowly, he may be able to understand and the teachings and the insights. Probably I feel that would be much helpful, because otherwise immediately if we are trying to inculcate non-self, like some deeper teachings into his mind, I feel it is too much for him.
That's all the written questions we have. So we've gone over time as well, so I think we will end the program now.
Right.
To end the program, I would first like to pass our merits and thank Bhante for his valuable time, even with the busy schedule at the monastery. To all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and to the participants for joining today to practice and share their questions. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Theruvan Sarnai.
Theruvan Sarnai.
Theruvan Sarnai.